Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
And welcome back to another episode of Asian Not Asian Podcast, a podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I'm your host, Fumi Abe.
And I'm Mike Nguyen.
Today is Saturday, November 20th. We hope this podcast finds you fully naked with just a condom on. Over to you, Mike.
If you're listening to us with your condom on, please, and if you're listening to us on the podcast app, please leave us a review. Leave us 5 stars. We love having that. We're trying to get to 1,000 reviews. If you're on YouTube, hit subscribe, hit like, and leave a comment. We want to know what brand of condom you like. Okay, mm-hmm, I'm a classic mm-hmm. guy. Okay, I like a good old Acme one, Acme condoms.
Acme? That's
Acme.
That's the shit that they give you at college campuses, I feel like.
Bro, that's the shit that they got, you know, the Roadrunner got, you know? So that's the kind I like. And if you're checking us out on Spotify, hit subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Also, if you're listening to it on YouTube, please don't abandon your audio platforms because that's how you mainly make money. So do both.
Do
subscribe,
both.
Subscribe, but also
hit both.
Download us on your phones.
One left.
The phone thing is a little bit more important. Before we start the show, we always give a shout out to our newest Patreon subscribers. What is Patreon? It is the best way to support this podcast. We're a completely independent operation. We're not with any network. So we need money to pay for our producers, editors, all that good stuff, especially now that Mike and I are on different coasts. So if you like what you've been hearing, please consider going to patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod and give us your money. And in exchange, we give you bonus episodes. We slide into your DMs. And most importantly, we give you a shout out on this podcast by guessing what ethnicity you are based on your last name. Also, a quick note, we are getting a lot. So just we do like 3 or 4 at a time. You know, if you're like, hey, I donated like 3 weeks ago, where's my name at? We'll get you within the month, okay? So just chill out, all right?
Just
chill out.
Just be cool.
Just be cool, man. It's really not a big deal, all right? So here we go. Our newest subscribers for this week. First person.
This is a good mix. We got a good mix.
Here we go. Atina Chaikithom. Atina Chaikithorn. Oh, I'm sorry. Chaikithorn.
Chaikithorn. Yeah, this person's Thai as shit. This person.
Oh, you think this is Thai?
Are you goddamn kidding me, dude? You put the word
Atina? I've never met an Atina before.
Okay, first of all, you're right. You're right about Atina. Atina sounds like a cyborg name. Okay? Like Atina Battle Angel Atina, right? But yeah. Chaikithorn, any thorn in there, that's like a Thai name. I mean, I bet you this is even the short Thai name. It probably goes on. Like
I didn't think it was long
letters.
Enough for Thai.
Yeah.
Oh, you think this is a British version?
Yeah, this is like the Little Wayne, you know, the shortened street version. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Of the Thai name. So Thai shit, and also Little Wayne. So there
you're
you go.
Thai Asian. I love that. I love that Thai people's last name. It's kind of like the that new Taylor Swift song that came out. It's like 10 minutes long, but it took her like 10. It took her like 10 years to release it because people weren't ready. It's like that.
Ready. Like, you're not ready for the full name.
We don't get the Thai version
you
until
get the
like
first
I don't know 20
three syllables. When you're ready, the other 12 will come out. Okay.
Yeah.
Love it.
Next, we have Patrick Wen. W-E-N.
Patrick Wen. I think that's Chinese. It's a good old
Chinese.
Good old Roland Heights Chinese dude. You know? Shout out to Roland Heights.
Next, we have V dot. Last name is Chow. C-H-A-U.
V Chow. That's kind of like a cool pop singer name, you know? I'm getting
like Taiwanese pop star vibes.
Yeah.
Hong Kong, Taiwanese.
Like, you know, HK pop, you know, going on V Chow. That's cool. I got the CD.
Yeah. Thank you so much for donating, and tell your record label we said hi. And last but not least, we have, is this Tammy?
I think it's
T-A-M-I-E Shu, H-S-U.
Tammy Shu.
Tammy. Shu's Chinese.
Shu's Chinese.
But Tammy?
Tammy.
Oh, is this fucking maybe a Japanese name like Tamie?
Word? Damn. You make everything Japanese, don't you?
Well, because it's like the pattern, you know?
Yo, I get you.
Well, my grandpa's name was Tamiya. So maybe Tamie, maybe a girl's name, maybe. half Taiwanese, half or half Chinese, half Japanese. Maybe.
Okay, you got that hypothesis. I'm gonna go Tammy. This is a good old Midwestern, good-hearted Christian Chinese woman living in Wisconsin. Okay, Tammy. Good old Tammy.
Tammy.
But she spelled it.
Good
a
old
quirky.
Tammy.
Good old Tammy. All right, get some donuts and chill. You know,
go get some fried curd. We love that about Wisconsin.
Love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for donating. And if you want to get into this game, please go to patreon.com/asian.asianpod. Mm-hmm. Before we bring our guest on, we always like to start this podcast by asking each other what kind of Asian we were this week to figure out what it means to be Asian American. So, Mike, what kind of Asian were you this week?
I was a crime victim Asian. Okay. This happened. I was, for people who know, I was visiting my relatives in Los Angeles last week. My mom and my aunt, we were staying at my aunt's house, and my aunt is, you know, she does well. And she lives in a very nice part of Los Angeles. And I was there for 3 days. I was there, well, no, like 4 days. I got there like on, you know, Thursday, and I left on Sunday. In over those 4 days in Southern California, my mom was a victim of crime twice. Whoa. Twice.
In that neighborhood, in that nice neighborhood.
So first on Friday, she went to go get me some pho. She went to Pho 79. It's like won a James Beard Award. It's the best pho. I mean, it's a really good. It's really good. And so she was in that. She was in the parking lot with my aunt, and man has a nice car, and they had their purses in the front seat, and my mom is like loading the car with pho for her baby boy. That's me, and
loading the car with pho, like in the trunk
to go. She was loading up the car with like pho, and my aunt is in the driver's seat, and they notice there's these other guys who are parked right next to them. In her description, they looked kind of scary. That's what she described them as. She said they looked kind of scary. They were like young guys. And she was like, what's going on here? But whatever. She's loading the pho up. And my aunt notices she needs some help. So she gets out of the car. As soon as my aunt gets out of the car, the scary guy car peels out and drives off. And they're like, whoa, what was that? And then right away, they realized they had taken the purses that were sitting in the driver in the passenger seat. So
with the windows down?
So we're not sure. They can't remember if they had the windows down or maybe they just opened the door and took it. But they took both of the purses from my aunt and my mom. And so, you know, that was a fucking, that sucked, you know. But, you know, they were okay. Physically, they were okay, but it's fine, whatever. Then, Sunday, okay, my mom has a car. It's this old Accord. And I was driving it over the weekend. I park it in this nice neighborhood in Los Angeles. Yeah. I park it, and we're all going to go to dim sum. So I'm like loading up the car. We love loading cars. And so we're loading up the car again with more stuff. And we're going to go to dim sum. I turn on the car. It's loud as fuck. So loud. I thought that the engine was going to explode on me. Uh-huh. And I'm like, Mom, something wrong with the engine. And we realize that someone had stolen the catalytic converter out of the car. So the catalytic converter is a bunch of like rare earth metals. It runs from there's like a pipe that runs underneath the car, and it turns like, you know, some noxious gases into something inert, and it's part of the exhaust. So, and the way to steal it is you undo these two bolts and you cut the pipe, and you can take that. And people do this in Los Angeles. I don't know what it is. For some reason, normally this is like not worth stealing. The rare earth metals that are in there are like worth $10. But I think you can sell the whole unit for like thousands of dollars. Okay, the catalytic converter costs more than the entire car itself. So they stole this thing in front of my aunt's house. And this is the craziest part. They called the cops. And because it's a nice neighborhood, the cops not only showed up, they solved the crime. I didn't know cops could do that.
That never happens.
That never happens.
Cops don't solve crimes.
No. Usually you give a report to a cop and you're just telling them a fun story. Okay, that's not...
It's like, exactly.
It's just a fun story for them. They go, oh, okay, well, you have a nice day, ma'am. Yeah, and they leave.
And they write it in their like little notepad that's this thick. There's nothing on
there. There's nothing on there. It's just a bunch of Pokemon cards. They solved it. They caught these guys. Apparently, they had caught them the night before. They were going around stealing catalytic converters. Because like I don't know what it is, like there's a certain model of car that they want like Toyotas and stuff, so or Hondas, and they caught these dudes and they got the catalytic converter back. So it's this giant thing. It's like 5 feet long, and it's just like sitting on this, like, you know, my on the dining table. It's just she's like, we got it back. Turns out, all these dudes, all these criminals, Vietnamese people, Vietnamese dudes. Okay,
damn.
I don't know if it's the same guys. We have a theory, a working theory, that it's the same guys.
The first people,
like maybe they like. Looked at.
She remembers the first couple being Vietnamese or Asian.
She assumed they were, right, because of where they were and everything like that. And they were afraid because, like, you know, they got, like, IDs and stuff, right, in the purse. And so they're like, maybe they followed us back.
The address.
Maybe they went back to the address to, like, whatever, and they saw the thing, and they stole some catalytic converters. And so this always goes back to me, you know? Like, people of color, sometimes our worst enemy is ourselves, okay?
Oh, yeah.
We steal from each other. We steal from ourselves, okay? We're not out there trying to steal from white people. Don't worry, all right? We're going to steal from other Vietnamese people. So it was just, like, insane. And it just, like, it was just crazy, this whole cycle of things. Not only that there was crime happening, but that actually the crime got solved. I guess you could call it solving. But, like, you know, it's just what, like, Mad Max world of Los Angeles is this? It was crazy. That was my story.
I'm assuming, like, it's not easy to put that shit back, right? Now your mom has to make an appointment, and, like, I don't even know how she's going to get the car there. She has to get it towed there or something.
So I think in the grand circle of life, right, Vietnamese people stole it. Vietnamese people will fix it. And so she knows a guy, a Vietnamese mechanic.
I mean,
he's going to do it, and he's going to get paid in persimmons, and it's going to be cool, man. Okay? Yeah, and it's going to be a beautiful story. I don't know. She's got to get it, and she's got to, like, get rid of that car because...
Well, I'm glad your mom's okay. I mean, that first
They're
thing
okay.
is mad scary. That, but like older Asian women get taken, like that happens everywhere, man. Like I remember when I was younger, my grandma was like, this is back in Japan. She was like riding her bike, and then like a student riding his bike the opposite direction, he just reached in because she has her like, you know, in Asia they have like baskets in the front, and she put her purse there. She just fucking, he just took it, pushed her bike over, and then just kept riding. You know. Yeah, I mean, it's just like that shit happens all the time, you know? And there's like, you know, your mom's not going to run after these guys, you know?
No, of course not.
It's sad. It's really sad.
You're totally right. I mean, you know, like we talk about stop Asian hate. We got to stop Asian self-hate. That's what we need to do.
Oh, there we go.
Right?
There we go. Yeah.
Right?
Asian on Asian crime. Asian on Asian crime, dude.
Asian on Asian, not Asian, Asian crime.
But also kind of your fault because you wanted that pho.
I actually did think that. Maybe this is all my fault. This is all my fault because I wanted
also,
that
pho. I don't know if I'm stupid. I still don't understand what it means to load up a car with pho. Like, it's just, it comes in a bag. I don't, like, did she get a, just like,
bro,
an industrial size thing
when,
of soup?
When, because of how my family rolls, okay, and how it is, whenever somebody wants one thing, you got to order for everybody. So she had like four orders of pho.
Yes,
that's
yes,
like 18
yeah.
gallons of broth, you know? Like,
she's
loading up. And, I will say, totally worth it because that pho is delicious.
That pho was good.
It was
good.
So fucking good. You guys got to go pho 79.
I'm literally imagining you like, your mom is telling you this story.
Yeah, and I'm
and
just
like,
no, past the sriracha. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so sad. So sad, but totally worth it. Anyways, that was a victim Asian. How about you? What kind of Asian were you this week?
This week I was a white guy Asian, man. I'm always a white guy Asian. Sometimes I be white guy Asian.
Sometimes you be white guy Asian.
It's tough, man. I think I was a white guy Asian once. I think I talked about this on a podcast.
What do you mean once? Your like whole life is that. What do you mean?
Well, today, okay. So like something has been happening in my brain where like part of my job is to write these like monologue jokes for middle of America, and monologue jokes are like just by definition. It's like a little vanilla, you know. You can't be too crazy
it's
with
gotta
it.
It's got to be accessible.
Just by definition, it's that way.
It's got to work.
And it's really not my style of comedy. And I think over the last 6 months or so, like I've trained myself to write better monologue jokes for the American middle American family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tap into that energy, sometimes I feel like there's another writer inside of my brain. I call him Jeff Myers. He's just like a white guy from Ohio. And sometimes I write something and I'm like, I didn't write that. Jeff Myers wrote that.
I was looking at the outline that we had for today, and then you had written down Jeff Myers, and I was like, oh, must be some new comic I've never heard of. And I was like looking him up, and I was like trying to find Jeff Myers, and I was like, this is nothing. This is leading me to a whole bunch of like barbecue blogs.
Yeah,
and
you know how Beyonce has Sasha Fierce? I have Jeff Myers.
This guy's got cargo shorts on, man. Hell yeah,
bro.
Dude. Bro.
So I wrote this joke that I was like, I didn't even think it was that funny, but like it got written up on the New York Times.
Oh shit.
And this is the joke, and I was so, I mean, it's like the joke is whatever, but I was like, sometimes I feel I'm losing myself during the show because I'm like writing for
like
somebody else.
That, yeah, Jeff Myers wrote it. Yeah.
Jeff Myers wrote it, bro. Okay, let's this go. Was the joke. Yeah. This is the
I
joke.
I
want to
hear it. I want to hear it. Go, hit me.
The joke. Okay, the premise is Biden is having a meeting with Justin Trudeau and the president of Mexico.
Sure.
And this is true. He's calling it the Three Amigos Summit. That's what he's calling it. Okay, yeah, that's the premise. And my joke was, which is still better than what Biden wanted to call it originally, which is Meeting La Vida Loca. That was the joke.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. That's got Jeff Myers written all over it.
That's Jeff Myers.
That's Jeff Myers. The classic Jeff Myers bit. Okay? Great.
That's not a Fumi Abe bit. Okay. And sometimes I have these moments where I think of these jokes and I'm like, you know, last week we were talking about like off-brand jokes, like jokes that you come up with and you're like, oh, I can never say that.
Yes, that would never, really, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I've been having these Jeff Myers. Sometimes Jeff Myers takes over and it's like a scary thing. This is also another Jeff Myers joke that came into my head the other day. Somebody was asking me what mangosteen was. You know what mangosteen is?
No. It sounds really familiar. What is that?
Mangosteen, it's a Southeast Asian fruit. I used to have it all the time when I lived in Singapore. It's like a cousin of...
Yeah.
And somebody was like, what's mangosteen? And Jeff Myers in my head was like, mangosteen is like mango, but it's Jewish. And I was like, nope, that's not a food. That's a Jeff Myers joke. You know what I'm saying?
So that's one of Jeff Myers's more edgy jokes too.
He met
a Jewish fellow once when he went to Philly, and he's like, they're nice people, you know. So
I get scared. I get scared when Jeff comes out sometimes, you know, because I sometimes feel like I'm losing myself. I'm losing myself to Jeff.
You ever watch Venom? You ever watch that movie Venom?
Yeah. It's terrible. But
he's got the symbiote. He's got the symbiote. Who's telling him to like eat livers. You got Jeff Myers, and Jeff Myers is like, come on, get a Coors Light.
So anyways, that was I was a white guy Asian this week, and right, I would love to ask our guest what kind of Asian he was this week. Our guest this week, we're so excited to have him. He is an Emmy Award winning writer and comedian. He's currently a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He's a fellow late night Asian, which is why I have my James Corden mug, just to show him what's up.
Okay? What's up?
So what's up? This is my turf. This is Bloods versus Crips. Okay. but it's late night. He was actually a fan of us before we really became anything. He used to write about us on Vulture. So we really have to. He's the best. Please welcome to the show the hilarious Mark Kramer.
Mark Kramer.
Hey. How are you guys?
Good, man.
We're getting victimized, and we're having a good time. Fucking Jeff becoming Jeff Myers.
Jeff Myers is here.
Jeff Myers is here. Shout out to Jeff Myers.
The sad thing is that Jeff Myers is like infinitely more hireable than you, Fumi.
I know.
You should have a Jeff Myers resume, you know, that you send out. Yeah. You know? That's good. That's good.
I should have a separate like notepad for Jeff Myers jokes, and like we should have a segment on the show called White Guy Jokes. And we should just tell
we should do white guy jokes. Yes.
Yeah, you'll end up renaming the show like Jeff Myers, not Jeff Myers.
Mark, well, you heard what kind of Asians we were this week. What kind of Asian were you this week, Mark?
Yeah, I have been a teenager Asian this week.
Hey!
Hell yeah. I am currently, this is day 3 of me back on Staten Island at my mom's house. I'm recording from her guest room closet.
Wow!
I don't know if you guys feel this way, but like whenever you're back home visiting your parents, like you get in this mode where you're like a kid again, and they treat you like not a 32-year-old guy that is a professional comedy writer anymore, and they just you argue over every little thing again like when you were kids.
Yeah.
And you let her cook meals for you all the time, which is great. My mom's great. It's just a matter of like, you know, this is like back, you shrink back to who you were again.
You are, yeah, I get it. Do you still have your bedroom and everything like that? Is all
no,
set
this,
up like...
this is a different house, but okay. I happen to be in the closet where my mom stuffed all the shit that my brother and I didn't want to get rid of, but she doesn't want in the house. So it's got like all of our baseball jerseys, all of our old stuff, our comic books, like everything that we refuse to throw out, but she wants to get rid of.
I always feel that my mom will no matter what the occasion that I came home for, it's like, oh, my, our grandfather just passed away, or it's somebody's wedding or whatever. My mom will always stick in what I call the task, something she's saved for me that's dirty, like a dirty job that she's like, Mike, I know you're wearing a tuxedo right now for your sister's wedding, but we need to clear out all these leaves now. You know, it's been 2 years. And I'm just like, Mom, are you serious? Just pay someone to do it. I don't want to do it. And she's like, you're here now. Mark, I mean, I'm glad that you're at home. I assume you're there for the holiday. But, you know, you're tell the fans, because we can see where you are. It looks like you're in some sort of bunker. But you're at your mom's house, and you're in Staten Island, where you grew up.
I am in Staten Island, where I grew up. Not my favorite place in the world.
do you really mean that? Because I think a lot of people say that about their hometown because it's like racist or problematic, but like, is it a love-hate thing, or do you legit not like it?
I mean, you know, like any hometown, you find the things that you like, which is mostly food here.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, there's great Italian food, there's great pizza, and there's great Ralph's Italian Ices, is the fucking rules. But, you know, everything else I could lose, honestly.
You need like three things.
Yeah. I mean, you're like more cruel than God, you know? It's like, okay, I will build an ark and pizza, ice, and nothing else. Everybody else fuck off, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one. Like, I'm a Filipino Jewish guy from Staten Island. Like, Pete Davidson has once said that, like, he wished Staten Island would, like, wash away in a flood, which, you know, did not go over well here, but, you know, it's not, people who grew up here, either they stay here and this is their favorite place in the world and they put up a Blue Lives Matter flag all around the neighborhood.
Well, just so like our fans can get to like know you a little bit, we had Peter Rivella on like a couple months ago, and he's a white guy who grew up in Staten Island, so he gave us a little, you know, background about that. But like, can you just tell us real quick, like, what was it like growing up in Staten Island as like a Filipino Jewish dude,
I mean, you know, honestly, it was bad, but like the Jewish side was like just as bad as the other side. Like,
really?
Yeah, like there was like hardcore anti-Semitism here.
Fuck.
There was one kid who was like half Italian and half Jewish. And I remember in middle school, like, you know, the kids would beat him up and then say, there's no way you're half Italian and half Jewish, because they wouldn't mix the best race with the worst one.
Whoa.
Oh, Jesus.
My God.
Brutal.
Wow.
I always forget that Staten Island racism is like the major leagues, and I feel like where I grew up in Ohio, it's like minor leagues. You know what I'm saying? Because that's straight up like hate crime language. You know, like where I grew up, they were like, "Your eyes are funny." That's some AAA, you know, Columbus Clippers kind of shit. You know, this is New York Yankees racism, and that's really intense.
And they're like, you know, you don't learn that in middle school. Like, there is not a class for that. They're getting it from their parents. And so, it was a lot of that, like, even, and, you know, that stuff exists today still. Like, I was driving around yesterday, there was, like, a little table set up where it looks like in front of a CVS, where it looks like where someone would be selling Girl Scout cookies. When we got closer, there was a big sign that said, "Let's go, Brandon," and they were selling, like, "Let's go, Brandon" flyers and stuff. Yeah. It's still happening. But, like, growing up, it was just, you know, it was, like, fully Italian-Irish. I would lie and say that I was part Sicilian because Sicilians are darker.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I think
that's a good strategy. I would buy that too. You do have, you know, did you grow, how early did you start growing a mustache? Because I feel that also kind of helps. Huh?
No, that was just like 2 years ago. But I did have a haircut.
Okay. Okay.
Wait,
cool.
What's the Staten Island haircut? Is that like the Pauly D? Like,
yes, the Pauly D full
shaved
like,
and in gel.
Yes.
Did you have a gold chain and everything, like to try to blend in or anything like that?
It was silver. Yes, but at the place where I got my haircut, also at after 6 p.m. they would start playing pornos on the TV.
I just love that. I'm just like, it's like 5:58 and they're like, guys, come on, let's get classy, okay?
After
and
dark.
Then just the crazy anal porn stuff would start.
I heard that there were actually like a decent amount of Asians in Staten Island, because like Jun Chung is from there. Is there not like a Korean population there because of Staten Island Tech and some of the better schools out there?
I did go to Staten Island Tech.
There
were like a fair amount of Asians at Staten Island Tech, but that's because that school, like, people from all over the island go to that school, but like. Where I grew up on the South Shore of Staten Island, it's all Italian and Irish. That's it. So like, I didn't meet like another Asian person until like high school. pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I would, I mean, so I have to, this kind of begs the question. Okay. You're Filipino and Jewish. You're a cute little kid. Okay.
Yeah, you're real adorable. Cute.
Yeah. Can't
Go
believe
to the
you're
YouTube.
In, you're
He's
adorable.
Cute.
You're adorable.
But he's taken, ladies.
But
down, down, ladies.
But I want to say, why did your parents go there? How good are these real estate prices? If they're like, you know what? Oh. Hate crimes are worth it, you know, for a 3-bedroom? Are you kidding me? I'm in there, you know?
That's a good question. Like, I need to ask my mom that. Like, my my dad lived in Brooklyn, and my mom, who, you know, came here as a nurse in, like, 86 or something. And they met, and then they had like got pregnant with me, and then moved to Staten Island. I think maybe just like, you know, we don't want to raise a kid in Brooklyn.
As a crazy social experiment of just like, let's try to raise the toughest kid in the world. Like, what?
Well, you know, I don't think that like mixed race parents, like especially in the 80s, like we're not prepared for any of this. You know,
That's a good point.
There was no like guide to like how to talk about this with your kids, and I did not get that. I definitely did not get that talk. Like. And I think that's like what I've been unpacking as an adult is like, okay, yeah, when I have kids, like we got to figure this out because, you know, like it was just like such shame and like lying and everything and like trying to like manage how I'm presenting myself to different people because like of where I grew up. And I'm sure like Fumi, you grew up in like a white neighborhood too, right? So like I'm sure to some extent you were trying to like code switch.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the reason why I played lacrosse and, you know, I'm 120 pounds. Why would I play lacrosse?
Lacrosse is the equivalent. That's the Ohio equivalent of saying you're Sicilian. You know? Don't worry. From that family. You know, where I play lacrosse. Okay, that was weird. Okay.
You. I think you said in a podcast or maybe like an interview or something that you feel more culturally Italian because of where you grew up. But is that something that you're trying to sort of analyze and not embrace as much that now that you're in your 30s and you're trying to like, you know? Because I feel. A lot of people who grew up in that kind of environment, like we come out as Asian in our 30s, you know what I mean? And do you still feel that way about being more culturally Italian?
No, I do not feel that way. I think I like to say that I became Italian through osmosis just from like absorbing it.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, like going down that route and just like being friends with white people and all that shit like led me to like bad depression and like all that shit that comes with like suppressing your identity. And similar to you, Fumi, like I studied accounting and finance and like worked at a big four accounting firm after college.
Did you?
Ooh, which one?
KPMG, baby.
Hey! Whoa, yeah!
That's the one.
And that's the magic word for today. All this confetti comes down. You guys can't see it, but there's all this confetti in Mark's closet now.
We've been waiting to get a KPMG guy on this podcast.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know.
Years.
Yeah, wow. Years. Okay. Yeah. First of all, how do I get a job there? That's the first thing. Okay. And then, I mean, so that's interesting. I mean, did you feel like, so, you know, you got this, you know, you're trying to assimilate into this Italian culture, but you still got, it sounds like, you know, a little bit of that, you know, Asian immigrant, I got to go get a good old CPA type of job. You have a CPA, right?
I passed all four parts and then I did not send in the paperwork because I was like, I don't want to do this with my life.
Oh my God.
If I send in the paperwork, then I'll have to like do it.
Yeah, you have
so
to do it.
I just never sent in the paperwork. And I never told my parents I did that either.
So, oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Wow.
Well, it's not too late, okay? You still have the paperwork. We still have it, so you can send it. So, you know,
my
tell
mom
me
will
then.
Encourage me. Even though I have an Emmy, my mom will tell me to go apply to CPA jobs when I am unemployed next, whenever that is.
Yeah, no, we're gonna get definitely to the fact that the CPA is far more valuable in the mind of an Asian parent than it.
It's true.
An Emmy? Come on, we sell that on eBay. You know, come on. You know, so I want to talk about, you know, how'd you get into doing, you know, comedy? Now you're a comedy writer. You used to write for Vulture. Sounds like you were doing this, but like what's the sort of timeline? Were you working and doing actuary tables in the day and then also writing comedy at night? Because, you know, sort of
that's
what was that
badass.
Process? Yeah. It's kind of sweet.
I was doing just the KPMG thing and like, you know, as you like, the hours are insane and like you don't have time to do anything else besides go to happy hour later and complain about the job. That's what everybody does there. That's the cycle of depression and alcoholism. So, you know, and so I was doing that and actually what like the last straw for that for me was like, I got put on this project where, it was after the financial crisis and it was this company that was supposed to be paying us that got government money that was supposed to be paying us to like double check that they didn't give out bad mortgages. So like, you know, the stuff from The Big Short. So, but they were paying a team of 20 people to do absolutely nothing. They had no work for us. So we sat in a basement for 8 to 9 months. My friend watched all Breaking Bad at his desk.
Oh my god.
We would go to the movies during work time, like down the block. That's when I used to study for the CPA exam. And then
what? Oh my god.
Yeah, I know.
You could have been writing a great pilot, bro, you know?
I know. So it was bullshit. And I was just like, this is insane. I'm just wasting my life in a windowless basement, like
literally
doing nothing. I'm getting paid fine. Like, sure, I'm getting paid. And I know that many people would kill to be in that position to do nothing for and get paid like decent money. But I was just like, I can't like see myself doing this in 2 years, let alone 50 years from now. And so I kind of just tried to figure out what can I do. I knew like I liked writing from just, you know, like high school and stuff. I ended up like finding like an entry level advertising job after that, which like gave me way more time. And then that's when I started like taking UCB classes and stuff. I'd sketch classes, eventually like got on a sketch team at the Pit. And then we would just have our meetings at my office, the advertising office.
Dude, yes.
Oh my God.
What agency did you work for?
It was Universal McCann.
Yeah, I worked at McCann. There you go. Shit. I worked at McCann.
We're probably in the same building.
And I would definitely hold tons of meetings at this McCann building. I mean, that's like the big value of that is just like, is like you can fuck around and have people come over and like the senior people kind of turn a blind eye to it. They're just like, whatever, I don't care. I'm getting drunk and having an affair with the intern. So like, you know, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. My sketch team like will get to eat the leftover food from all the meetings.
That's so funny. Dude, literally all of our sketches that me and Mike filmed from like 2006, it's all in my office at Columbus Circle. Yeah. All of them.
All
we
of
would
our
film
shit.
Sketches on the weekends. Yeah, we kind of wanted to ask you about, okay, so what I found is, you know, Mike and I, we do stand up and that's kind of our like main mode of transportation to other jobs and stuff. But when I first got to the writing room at Corden, I was so shocked that like there were so few stand ups and a lot of people were just like, yep, I'm just a writer. And I'm like, oh, are you big on Twitter? They're like, no. And I'm like, do you do improv? They're like, no. I'm like, I'm just a writer. And I know you did a little bit of sketch. But I'm just genuinely curious to know, like, how did you kind of like stand out? Because I feel at least with stand up, you can get a late night set or a Comedy Central set and kind of be like, hey, this is me doing something on television. But if you're just like a writer, I have no idea how you even break into the industry, because this is an industry that has like such a high barrier to entry. Yeah. Honestly, probably harder than getting into Harvard, if I'm being completely honest. Like, it's very, very hard to get into. I just wanted to kind of like, this is just for my curiosity, but how do you even like go about doing something like that?
The good thing is if you do get into Harvard, then it's very easy to get into this industry.
That is true. That is true. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
Nice. So first, get into Harvard. That's the easy part is to get into Harvard. Part. That's the first step. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's great.
You know, I think I just got really lucky with like a bunch of things. Like a sketch that I wrote got into like an NBC sketch showcase thing that then I got into the Late Night Writers Workshop because they knew me. And then the Late Night Writers Workshop is like a thing that trains you to write for late night. That's all it is. And then, you know, I go from that to like, then I was a writer's assistant at WWE for a little bit. Gave me a lot of stories to talk to people about. I went from that to like I was writing for Vulture this whole time. Then through Vulture, like I got connected with Kenan Thompson and we worked on a project together and that was really cool.
Whoa, yeah. That's awesome.
And so, I just like lucked into a series of things. I guess like the writing was strong enough to like get the attention of like certain people. And then eventually, like I was just submitting packets constantly. Like the Last Week Tonight packet was like my 26th packet, I think, that I'd done. Yeah. And that's just like the game. That's just how you get one of these jobs is just to like fucking apply.
Just apply.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, like, it is interesting because I haven't done that many packets, but you know, I've submitted a bunch and I was surprised to find that most writers in late night, but also in a lot of different places are not stand-ups. Right. And people are sometimes surprised to hear that too. And I always have to think like, yeah, stand-up is kind of like a different art form. Yes, you know how to write jokes, but to like put together a packet is in and of itself kind of its own skill. And I was submitting a bunch, and this is during the pandemic, so I got depressed, but I didn't want to submit anymore. I remember there was one that went out, and I remember typing this
thing. The Jon Stewart one?
Oh, my God. the essay that there was like a monologue thing you're supposed to write. And I swear to God, that last half of it was just me complaining to whoever would read this. I was like, please send help. You know, like I just couldn't do it. And I don't know, how do you kind of stay fresh? Because for me as a stand-up, you know, I try to focus on, you know, oh, this is like a fun thing I'm going to try tonight. You know, I'm going to do this. And that keeps me grounded in the process of like, I'm going to write this fun bit. Or sometimes I just focus on the performance aspect. I'm just like, I'm going to have fun, try to have fun tonight. But like when I'm writing these packets, I'm like, okay, this is like, you know, the 500th monologue joke I got to write. And I got to come up with this weird desk bit. And then I got to also submit something else. And it got so mechanical for me, you know. And again, I haven't written that many, but you know, how do you try to keep it fresh in your mind? You know, what's the process for a person who's just at their desk?
Yeah, that's like, I hear that question from so many people now, because like, you know, the jobs are so few and far between that they do come, especially the Jon Stewart thing, there are so many people applying, and you see the tweets, and you're just like, why am I even bothering with this? Like, there's like a million people applying. I think like this is going to sound lame, but like just trying to be like, all right, if like there's like one joke in here that's funnier than whatever I submitted on the last packet, like that means I'm getting better at this.
Yeah.
And then that means that the next packet will be better than this one. And also like trying to get as many people to read it as you can, and like get notes on your stuff too. Mm-hmm. Even if like, even after you submit it and then, you know, did it get rejected, like still even asking people just to be like, hey, just like, how can I improve this? Because, you know, nobody's going to submit a perfect packet. And like what you were saying about your just trying to be fun with the performance or whatever, I think that's what like you got to do in a package, just like have fun with it. Because if you're not, if you're just trying to like, I'm just going to write these like boring monologue jokes that are in the voice of whoever, like that's, you know, it's not going to, like, you're not going to have fun and they're not going to have fun reading it. And then your voice is not going to come out. Like, the trickiest part with these late night jobs, as you were just talking about, Fumi, with Jeff Myers, like, it's just hard. It's like so hard to get in the voice of a different person.
Yes.
As when your cultural experience is so much different from them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you find that, like, how's that been for you? I mean, obviously, like, it's I think it's something you can learn how to do. But as a stand-up, sometimes it's scary because I don't want to lose my voice, but I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you think, because maybe as a writer, if you're just a writer person, you want to kind of be like a Swiss Army knife and be like, I can write for this and her. And you know what I mean? Like all over the place, where I want to be able to do that. But also like my main knife, my fucking katana, that's the Fumi katana. That's the most important one. You know what I mean? So I want to always, I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense, but like that's what I'm always afraid of, is I don't want to be that guy who just gets really good at writing for this one person.
Yeah. For other people. Yeah.
Well, what is Jeff Myers' weapon? Like a hunting knife or something?
No, he Jeff Myers is like the, you know, the fork you use when you barbecue and you're like turning
over. Yeah.
He's got that guy.
That's Jeff Myers.
It's not a katana blade. That's Jeff Myers.
I think like it's just like you have to develop both skills. I think you know, like and the sad part is about like late night now is like you have to, like, the odds are you'll be writing for a white guy, like a white older guy. And like I'm very happy at my show, like John's great and everybody's is awesome.
Disclaimer.
But like you know, it's just like that's just the landscape right now, and hopefully that'll change in a few years. Hopefully one of you guys will have a fucking desk. But like you know, I think that it's just like unfortunately a skill that like needs to be like both of them. And and I think to like keep my own voice going, I'm working on like pilots of my own and stuff in my free time and trying to like keep that skill sharp.
Absolutely. Working on that voice CPA, you know, right? That's what you're doing, right?
Exactly.
As you're doing your thing.
Yeah, you can, those things, like I find some like a little bit of like in pilots, like it's a lot of I was able to study for the CPA. It's a lot of like, okay, this, you got to do this and then you got to do this. It's like a very structured thing.
Yeah.
Like the only thing I miss from these old jobs is Microsoft Excel.
Are you a big Excel guy?
I love Excel. There's an art form to it. You get to like, 100%. You make like a nice pivot table, or like you get some good formulas, and you like get real
little conditional formatting.
Yes,
100%.
Oh my god, it's the best.
I truly believe Microsoft Excel is like one of the most important contributions like Bill Gates has ever released into this world. Like, it really changed. It really changed the way people work, and I still like even to this day. Like I remember like when I had roommates. I got really excited about making a Google Sheet expense sheet so that we can all put in our expenses, and I would put in formulas and it would divide it by like equal and tell us how much we need to Venmo each other. I do miss that about these writing jobs. No, not a lot of Excel at Corden, I'll be honest with you.
Not a lot of Excel.
Not a lot of Excel happening.
You got to make like a formula for the punchlines.
Oh, dude, I 100% think there could be something like that. If you figure, you know, like an if-then statement that you throw in there, and then, you know, and then my favorite thing is always to, my favorite function is concatenate. I love concatenate. I don't know why.
Why? Oh. Why? When do you, that's why?
I just love it. It's like such a big word for something so simple.
That's the one that like puts the words together.
Right? Just put things together. Yeah. It's the best. Yeah. I don't know why. I've also have never heard that word outside of Excel before. I almost think that it's a word that Excel made up to put this together. And I was like, this is not real. This is crazy. I love it. We're now the Excel Microsoft Excel podcast. And if you're enjoying it, please subscribe.
We do want to ask you this too, because you work for John Oliver, and you know you cover like John Oliver gets in the news like real deep. You know, you'll cover one topic for like 30 minutes, real deep, and you know, just as an example, you know, there's been a lot of bad news this week, you know, and I feel like, at least at my show, like, my show is less, like, racial injustice headlines, more trees that look like penis headlines, because that's just kind of like James'
vibe.
That's
just the vibe.
But John Oliver is like, let's talk about, you know, stop Asian hate. Let's talk about
assault rifles.
Just the American justice system, you know, the court system, you know, and... how do you fucking stay sane through all that? Because you do have to go every week
in
is
the
John
the
Oliver
same thing. Yeah,
John Oliver covers the saddest shit every week. Very rarely do I see you guys covering a tree that looks like a penis. That's really
rare.
Fun.
You guys need to get more into that. Yeah,
yeah. It is very debatable whether we have a comedy show or not. But I think, it's like we're on hiatus right now, and that's when I completely disconnect from the news. I try to stay off social media as much as I can, and like even during the season when I'm like not working on something that's like topical to that week, I'll just try to not look at the news. And I mean, you know, sometimes it's unavoidable, obviously, but like it's just exhausting. And you know, you just gotta like take care of yourself and watch like a shitty action movie from the 80s to like cleanse from a lot of that.
What's the move? What's the shitty action 80s movie?
I mean, on the plane over, I was watching Predator, original Predator.
Classic original Predator.
You can't beat that movie.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. Yeah, fuck yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
That's a good one. I'm also a Commando guy.
Oh, you're Commando rules.
Commando. Where at the beginning, and he like cuts down the tree and then carries it on his shoulder.
Yes, and then he picks up the telephone booth and throws it at the mall.
Yeah, you know how you learn that in Delta Force, you know, like gentlemen, we're gonna pick up phone booths and throw that tactical move.
John
I
Matrix
love it.
Is his name.
Yeah, no, John Matrix is his name. So it's crazy to me too. We're doing all sorts of research, and I finally followed you back on Instagram. I apologize for not following you back.
Mike, you have been disrespecting your guests left and right.
I'm real bad.
I'll be honest with you. Last week, he was like, we had Dana Dolly on. He was like, you know what? I fucking blocked you.
I blocked Dana for a while.
I couldn't stand her. Because she said that to her face.
I did. She was just, because you know what it was? It was like, I was like, I didn't realize that this was just a character, and she's actually a very sweet person. So now I follow her. And so, you know, you know what fucked me up though? Is that somebody told me about having a good ratio, and now I'm always obsessed with that. I'm like, oh, am I following too many people?
That conversation is so 2017.
I got in the game. You're right.
Mark, we read that, this has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. We read that when you first started comedy, you were writing some problematic sketches
that
had to do with Asians. Yeah. And we wanted to ask you what they were, because I feel with Asian jokes don't age really well because everything's moving so fast. Do you remember? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
This is just... Well, I don't know where we got this from, Mike. Our producer said you wrote some problematic sketches, and we're like, let's see what that was. Did you write any sketches with Asian characters in 2015? Like, I bet they're problematic by default.
In 2015, I think what she had seen maybe was a sketch we had written. It doesn't have to do with Asian characters, I don't think. But there, it was it was a Minion sketch. Okay.
Already problematic. Yep.
Yes, very problematic. basically, and so for our sketch show, one of the writers had two kids, and so we did the show for the kids. And in my Minion sketch, it was just like three people dressed as Minions, you know, doing like Minion stuff on stage in Minion language. But we had like subtitles behind them, and they were doing all fucked up stuff, like, you know, saying they were working for ISIS and all that kind of stuff.
that's because, not problematic.
Yeah,
that's
no,
funny.
Because
that's
the
not
kids
problematic.
Couldn't
that's
read.
Funny.
Yeah. I think, yeah, there was something about a Minion clitoris in there, I think.
Okay, there you go. That's good. That's good. I like that. I like that. Yeah, as soon as you said Minion clitoris, we were just like, nope, not problematic. Good to go. Good to go.
Yeah.
Completely fine.
Do you have any expired Asian jokes?
I do have. I would love to do my Asian accent joke again. I can't.
I don't think that's expired.
I don't know. I'm just careful with it. I feel it's kind of like uranium. You know, yeah, maybe in a certain form it's safe.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
in other forms,
yes.
It could, like, you know, become fucking, like, you know, it'll turn me into ash or whatever.
I could just see like a Gen Z audience member taping it and then just taping your accent part and then canceling you on TikTok, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel if you, it's one of those things, if you got to experience the whole thing, if you experience just a part of it, you'll turn into dust. But if you hear the whole thing, you get raised to another level. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, uranium.
Did listeners know that joke? I feel like that joke really elevated you to the next level back in the open mic days.
It did. It really did. And I don't know if it's because white people thought it was really funny. You know what I'm saying?
See, that's the thing. Is,
I always think about that. It worked every time, and I've done it.
But you don't know why they're laughing. I'm laughing for the same reason you're laughing, but they might be laughing because of the acoustics of the accent.
Yes,
right? Just
yes.
Just you doing an accent, and that's problematic.
And the thing for me is that I try to make it so that it's clear that this is not a real accent. I do a racist accent on purpose, do you know? But then... Yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, it might be too, I don't even say powerful. It's just like, it's like, you know, you got a vial full of Ebola. Okay. You know, maybe you don't want to be carrying that around.
It is scary. Yeah. This isn't like a huge joke, but I used to have this throwaway line where I would say like, I have a girlfriend, she's white. And I'd be like, thank you so much. And people would laugh because back then it's like, oh, haha. Like, because nobody wants to date Asian guys. But you can actually update. I think I'm all about updating shit. Now you can be like, I have a white girlfriend, and that's on me. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You can say that. Because you can flip it, because now white women aren't popular, you know? So, like, I feel like you could take a lot of the premises, you can, like, update it. So, I don't know. Maybe you can update your accent joke.
Maybe
I don't know.
So. I'd have to do it in, like, a very safe, like, level 4 bio lab. You know, I don't know what that looks like. But maybe maybe it's just you guys in a closed room, and you guys sign NDAs. And then I could try it. You know, that's the only way.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Let's talk about the gift that keeps on giving. Hello Tushy Bidet. It cleans your butt way better than wiping, cuts your toilet paper use down by 80%, saves trees, and all the thousands of gallons of water used to convert them into toilet paper. And it comes with a book full of poop jokes. My butt is in love. Guys, here at Asian Not Asian, we love Tushy. Mike and I both use it. And if you're wondering, guys, why are you guys always in sync? Why are you guys, the banter is amazing. You guys are so freaking funny. What is your secret? Well, it's because we have clean butts. That is our secret. The Hello Tushy Bidet washes your bum with fresh water for a way better clean than toilet paper. Make the restroom your best room with the complete Tushy system, including the Tushy Bidet attachment ottoman. It's got an ottoman, oh my god. Toilet brush and Tushy stand and tissues. Join the millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now who take care of their Yule logs the dignified way. Give the gift of a clean bum to yourself and your loved ones this holiday season and get 10% off plus free shipping right now at hellotushy.com/ANA. That's hellotushy.com/ANA for 10% off and free shipping.
Whoa, what was that?
Dang,
that's
crazy. What is that sound?
It's nice.
It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronized online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed.
Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources to make it easy for any business to succeed from down the street to around the globe. Like mine, Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first sale to full scale.
Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more.
Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond.
More than a store, Shopify grows with you.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Go to shopify.com/Asian, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features.
Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/Asian right now.
Shopify.com/Asian.
You know, so speaking of things kind of evolving and changing, we're going to get to everyone's favorite segment. It is Das Race News.
Das Race News. Hey.
And today we're going to talk about, you know, the Sesame Street debuts. I'm going to read this from AP. Sesame Street debuts Ji-young, first Asian American Muppet. Okay. And at 7 years old, Ji-young is making history as the first Asian American Muppet in the Sesame Street canon. She is Korean American and has two passions, rocking out on her electric guitar and skateboarding. The children's TV program, which aired 52 years ago, you know, is, you know, they kind of go in and talk to her about it. So it's cool. I mean, it's super cute. Ji-young. I think, too, it was good because they made this person Korean American, like very specifically Asian American. So into playing guitar and into skateboarding, you know, she already sounds like a cool Gen Z kid who has more Instagram followers than us. And I love it. I'm a big fan. I don't know, Mark, have you heard about this?
Yeah, I heard about it. I mean, it's cool. Sesame Street is not for me. Like, I'm not watching Sesame Street still. So, like, I get it. I get that, like, this is cool for, like, kids who are watching it, and it's great for, like, this generation growing up. I also think it's kind of weird that, like, you know, we're specifying, like, her race and then, like, Ernie's just like Ernie, and Oscar the Grouch is just like a garbage person, and so we're to assume that like they're just default puppet or whatever that default is, which is, if we're doing this like comparison to race, then that's white, and then it just like feels like then we're not talking about like what race means, like connected with other races. It's just like, and this is just one Korean person that hangs out with Big Bird,
right? Great point.
I don't know how Sesame Street work. Like, are there other characters whose races are revealed? Like somebody who's African American, or is that a thing? Or is she the only one? It's like, because I know they're like, because I always assumed Sesame Street was kind of like any children's show where it's like there's some humans and there's some creatures, and the creatures are, they're not any race because it's like a bird or like a guy who lives in a trash can, and then the humans can have races. So do they not do like? Is Bert not? I don't know. He's yellow, but is she the only person that are like this?
No, there are Muppets of different races. You know,
okay.
Sometimes previously they may not have been like, you know, I'm like really identifiably, you know, a certain race, but like they're either like supposed to be this race or like it's kind of like, you know, the things they talk about are about a certain race. So, I for sure, diversity is like a thing that Sesame Street always does. Like, the humans that are on there are like all the different kinds of races. And I remember growing up watching this, and they would, you know, sometimes there would be a section and the people would be speaking in Spanish and stuff like that. And like, as a kid, you're like, okay, all different kinds of races, all different kinds of things. People are upset about it. Some Republicans are real. They're saying that Sesame Street got too woke. And they are saying that Ernie is what race is Ernie, and some people are, and then people are countering and saying, well, Ernie's clearly Filipino, right? I don't know. I don't know. It does feel right. I don't know. I wanted to ask Mark if you have ever heard of that Ernie is Filipino, or if he's giving you a Filipino vibe.
I mean, I heard that from CJ Toledano, tweeted that, and yeah, he's right. Ernie's absolutely Filipino. Ernie is, I have an Ernie is in this closet.
No,
there's
shit.
There's an Ernie.
Whoa,
doll.
That's that our new guest. That's a new guest. Put him on right now. Yeah, no, go ahead, Mark.
I was like sucking on Ernie as a child. Like, you know, he's just like a beat up like doll that I would love, that I loved like way too old. And he's, yeah, we didn't throw him away. But yeah, he's absolutely Filipino.
Well, are people saying that because of something he does? Or like, what is it about? Because I don't watch the show.
You just look at it. Like, you just look at
it. Is it just a purely skin color thing? Is that what it is?
Yeah, but he's got like an outfit. He's got a red nose, so he's been drinking. Like,
yeah. His vibe is kind of Filipino. You know, he's like a chill. I don't want to say uncle, but like, you know, he's got the mellowness, you know. I could see if I were to turn Mark into a Muppet, he would just become Ernie. You know what I'm saying? With the mustache, I would feel, right?
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is kind of like, you know, black people claim Piccolo as being black from the Japanese anime Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Asian people are going to go ahead and claim Ernie. The CPAC is so mad right now. There's a guy named Matt Schlepp, which don't ever listen to a guy named fucking
come
Schlepp.
On, what, come on. Come on. That's like a fake name, anyways, man. Oh, come on.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. It's the whole movement of like, it's like him, and then like Ted Cruz was upset that Big Bird was getting vaccinated. It's like they think it's like a woke thing happening. But I think it'd be so funny if Sesame just came out and were like, actually, all of our characters are Asian. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. Do you have anything you'd like to plug? Where can our listeners find you in your work?
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been great to be on the show. I've been listening to you guys for a couple years now, and like,
oh my god,
it's been great to see how you guys have like blown up. It's awesome.
Blown up? We haven't got nowhere. Look at us. We're still.
We're terrible.
We're still using the same tech. Oh my god. Okay, go ahead. No. It's what we love to see is our fans become more successful than us. That's what we love. Yeah, Mark, baby. Yeah. You're gonna do it.
I hope this episode, you know, inspires our other fans to win Emmys and join late night staffs. But yeah, just follow me at Kramer Cram on Twitter, Instagram. I wrote for this book that's coming out next year called by MTV Books called Growing Up in Asian America, I believe, is the title. It's like a compilation of essays by a bunch of people that are better writers than me. That should be fun.
And please follow us on all the platforms at Asian.AsianPod. I'm also on there at the Fumi Abe. That's TheFumiAbe.
And you can find me on Instagram at NicePantsBro. If you're going to be in New York City, December 16th, Hack City.
It's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday. It's going to be happening at Union Hall. So check out. There should be tickets if you just look up Hack City Union Hall. Again, that's December 16th, and it'll be a lot of fun. So come check that out.
I think that's it. Mark, thank you so much for being on the show.
I do got one question. What is your favorite Excel function?
Oh my
god!
What was the one? You know, it's been so long since I've used one. But all right, I'm just gonna give you an answer here real quick. I don't remember the function, but pivot table. It's pivot tables.
Pivot tables. Yeah,
it's amazing. It's incredible.
It's like a next level.
100%.
Usage.
Yeah, I'm a little embarrassed to say that I've only made one once, and I didn't know how it worked. I did it. I followed the directions and it was doing the thing, but I still like conceptually was just like, what's happening? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I feel like I was a caveman. Yeah. I discovered fire, but I didn't really understand what I had done.
You got to level up your
I really
Excel
do.
Game. Yeah.
I do. Write a book about Excel. I would read the shit out of that, Mark. Okay. Yeah.
I'll do that.
All right. Well, check out this Excel book coming out brought to you by Mark Kramer soon. And until then, we love you.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.